Hello, and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, here with you every Tuesday at lunchtime to seek answers to questions large and small, and just explore what might intrigue you, dear listener, and me as well. We do this here on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. And of course, you can always get these shows at the Voice of Vashon website, voiceofvashon.org. Today, I am honored to have here in the studio a gentleman who has been part of Vashon Island and the world for a very long time. He is Martin Koenig, a public sector folklorist, and he's here because he has written and created an incredibly beautiful book about Bulgaria. But welcome, Martin.
Hi there. How are you?
My first question is, what is a public sector folklorist?
Well, a public sector folklorist is a person who works with different communities doing research, documentation, presentation, publication. Up until the 60s, the only people who did work in folklore, music, song, dance, would be, as a profession, would be, as a folklorist, would be someone attached to the university, academia. That's something I've never been involved with. Although I've taught in university programs, that was not a route that I took. Basically, I created a not-for-profit organization in New York City, and we basically worked in all the communities in New York City, going in, as I said, in terms of first doing research, seeing where they partied and the instruments that they played and the singers in the community, the dancers in the community, and try to put together with the community presentations to put on in concert halls around New York City. And then from that, we would make recordings, or we'd make videos, or we'd make different things, once again, in conjunction together with the community itself. But that, in a nutshell, is basically public sector folklorists.
And were you doing this before you began research for this book, which is called
Sound Portraits from Bulgaria, A Journey to a Vanished...
Is that what...
Is that world. What,
thank you. Is that what initiated your nonprofit? Which came first?
No. I think Liz Shepard got it right in her article that I didn't think of it in that way, but it is a 50-year project. And this is the culmination of it in terms of putting together a publication, a 144-page book with over 100 photographs, 109 minutes of music. And I got the opportunity through the Smithsonian to do that. When I started this work, I was in my 20s. I liked to dance. And I was a dance teacher, and I started out looking for material to teach. So that's how it first started. And then as it got beyond that, as I saw the richness of this music and dance formations and the whole sense of community in New York City of these different immigrant ethnic communities, I was fascinated by it, and it just pulled me deeper and deeper into it, until I was doing research in many different aspects of those communities.
So why Bulgaria? What made you focus this book and those, it looks like almost 12 years, on the country of Bulgaria?
Well, this book took me 4 years to do. I'm sitting down in my office on Vashon. It was 4 years of focused work based on material that I had recorded in the 60s and 70s, and photographs that I had taken in the 60s and 70s, and 16-millimeter film footage that I had taken in the 60s and 70s. But this was my opportunity to publish the material. Why Bulgaria? When I heard Bulgarian music in the 60s, it was very vital, it was very powerful, it was wild, very intense, and it spoke to me. But if you go to those older forms of music, it almost always does. This is not my first publication. So, you know, I've
tell
put
us
out,
about the others.
Well, I've put out another one for the Smithsonian 5 years ago, with Macedonian music and dance. And then before that, we did a smaller one, the Music of New York City. My organization put one out of different ethnic communities there. And then I did two for Nonsuch, Elektra. Three, actually, I did there. Two Bulgarian and one from Yugoslavia. There was a Yugoslavia at that time. And then I did lots of little small recordings for dance purposes, teaching dance, and students would be able to have a recording, an inexpensive recording. So lots of them.
While you were not really part of academia, you certainly got support from people I would consider academics, like Margaret Mead. You went over to Bulgaria with support, a letter and money. Anthropologist Margaret Mead. How did you pull that off?
Lomax knew me, Alan, and he had spoken to her that he thought I could do this work. And she was someone that was interested in recording cultures before they disappear. And so it was interesting. She supported me for about 8 years. Every year I went over, she would give me a small grant, and she asked nothing in return, just do the work. And periodically I had to take it to a lecture, which was no difficult task. It was, but I was young. I had no understanding of this great personality supporting me. I just thought, well, sure, she should support me. I'm doing meaningful work. But I look back on it now, and I really am, I'm very humbled by that she saw something in me to invest in.
Yeah, you must have been doing something right.
And this is the sort of thing I think that she would want to see come about from that work.
You titled this Journey to a Lost Civilization. That's not exactly the term.
Vanished World.
A Vanished World, yeah. And it goes to 1979. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you've been back to Bulgaria since then, and how, if at all, that culture has changed.
Well, first, you have to understand that Bulgaria was behind the Iron Curtain, quote unquote, right? So this is one of the East European, this is a Southeastern European country that was part of the Soviet world, which basically had it locked up from after World War II through 1989. People could not leave. People did not have freedom of coming and going in and out of the country. But there was a dynamic that, and there was a emphasis in trying to transform the country from an agrarian nation to an industrial one. The music as part of this book, the CDs, there are two CDs with them. That music is agrarian music. It's rural music. It's music that comes from the countryside. It's village-based music. Some of the performers on the recordings are villagers who then went to Sofia, the capital, and starred in Le Mystère des Voix Bulgares, for instance. Several of the people here, the women's choir that toured the United States years ago. And that choir originally came from these different villages, excellent singers, excellent dancers. Those were the first performers that were incorporated into national ensembles. There was a great film that was at the Vashon Theater, or was it a year ago? Cold War. It was about Poland, and it was great because the opening scenes were the Polish ethnographers going around from village to village to select these artists to bring in and put into an ensemble. It was a Polish ensemble, but the exact same principles happened in Bulgaria, in Yugoslavia, in Romania, in Eastern Europe.
And these were all behind the Iron Curtain, all behind under the Soviet Iron Curtain rule at the time.
That's right.
Did that affect your access at all?
The remarkable thing was that it it didn't. And part of the legitimization I got from Margaret Mead's letter was she was acknowledging, she was saying she was someone known to the Bulgarian Academy there. They knew her name and her reputation, and she was saying I was who I was presenting myself to be. Even then, people are amazed that I was able to come into this country with an Agra tape recorder, with Sennheiser microphones, with a Bolex 16 millimeter camera, with Ingenue lens, with thousands of feet of film and musical tape, and three cameras across my chest. And I did that for 6 years there, and I basically was not interfered with.
No one questioned you?
I'd come to a village periodically, and someone would say, leave.
Oh.
Get out of here. But that was very rare. I always came with letters. The letters had stamps from the right committee that had to sign for this, what I was doing there and why I was coming to their place. So I don't remember what your original question
My
was. We got off
question,
on a tangent,
yeah.
Dear. I don't know where the tangent is.
The original question was, you build this book as about a vanished
world.
Well,
how did it change?
How has it changed?
Yeah. Well, the first way that it's changed is 1989, communism fell. Walls were brought down. People were permitted to leave for the first time in 50 years.
And did they?
Between 1989 and now, depending upon who you talk to, between 15 and 35% of the nation has left. Now, Bulgaria had a population of almost 9 million people in 1989. It now has a population, depending upon who you talk to, between 6 and 7, a little more than 7 million people. So the first thing that's happened is people have left. The people who have left are young people. The people that have left are ambitious people. It's a catastrophic depopulation of the country. It's as if 45 to 90 million Americans left this country.
Wow. So presumably that's a brain drain.
Total.
And are the populations now concentrated in the metropolitan or the cities?
Yeah, the villages.
So does most of this go from these rural areas from which you collected the music?
Well, I've gone back. You asked if I went back. I've gone mm-hmm. back. I've gone back about half a dozen times in these 4 years. I had to go back to get permissions from either the performer themselves or from the families of these performers to allow me to do this. So that was...
How did you find those people?
Well, when the Smithsonian asked me to do that, I told them they were crazy. It's I don't know how you do something like that. And then I decided that, you know, it would be very interesting for me just to retrace retrace the places where I've been 50 years before. So I went there thinking one way or the other, whether this works out and I do this or not, it would be a remarkable trip to take.
Indeed.
And I went and took this trip. And it was remarkable. It was the most emotionally fulfilling effort that I've ever made in doing field work and going out. Number one, I wasn't asking anybody to sing or to play. I wasn't collecting. All I was doing was asking for a signature and giving out an honorare in exchange for that, and the book that would come to them when it got printed. And I was able to find 69 of the 81 performers.
That's pretty remarkable, because my next question was, who's missing from this book?
Well, everyone's in there. 69 was sufficient for the Smithsonian to make the effort. I also gave a contribution to not-for-profit arts organization in Bulgaria, which is a fair enough exchange that does work with folk arts. So they felt that we had made sufficient effort. But the question, a village that had 800 people when I worked there in 67 for one of the groups that I recorded, they have 80 people left. So 10% of the population is still there. And that's pretty, that's not bad, actually. That's because that's just 45 minutes outside of Sofia, the capital. So people, and I don't even know if they're full-time people, those 80 people, or whether they come in the summertime and hang out there. But many of the villages are empty, or they have a half a dozen people in there, and the half dozen people are all over 70 years mm-hmm. of age. It's just a very sad situation in that particular way. You have empty villages, but it's not just Bulgaria, it's Greece. It's Macedonia, it's Serbia. You have houses standing empty or just deteriorating.
Why is that? Is there something about the lack of progress or infrastructure in those countries that has stalemated their progress?
You can't make a living. They can't make a living. They try to do it with industrialization, but they can't compete with China. They can't even compete with China agriculturally, which was their strength. When China is able to sell garlic to Bulgaria, that was the green thumb of the green thumbs as a nation, that says something about the situation. It's a situation we see all over the world, only you don't hear about Bulgaria. Because, you know, Bulgarians... as I say, so many of them left the country. They came to the West. They came to America. It never was stronger than when I once went through Chicago on my way back from Bulgaria in the last few years, and every baggage handler had a red and white threaded bracelet, which is for March 1st. Which all Bulgarians wear on March 1st. Not just Bulgarians, I think Greeks do also, Macedonians do from that part of the world. And it's celebrating Baba Marta, which is the change from winter to spring and the arrival of spring. And every handler at that airport was wearing a Martinica. And it turns out that Chicago has the largest number of Bulgarians in the United States.
And Poles.
And
as well.
It's an ethnic center. Yes,
it is.
Immigrant ethnic center, all the urban areas.
So two questions come to mind. One is the language is very unusual. It smacked to me of Russian script. And I guess that has something to do with its Soviet occupation, this Cyrillic script. I'm wondering, number one, did you learn the language or some part of it? And number two, what do they sing about? What are these songs about?
They sing about life. I mean, just you think of the songs that come from Appalachia, or songs that are in any traditional culture, and it's the same songs. It's the songs about health, the songs about life, the songs about love, the songs about singing about life, different customs, different rituals. The question of language, the Bulgarians do have a language that's similar to Russian.
Mm-hmm.
It's a simpler language than Russian. And I had taken Russian in university when I went to college in New York City. And so I went there with 2.5 years of Russian under my belt. And I came there and there is a similarity, though the words are different, but you speak to people, and I was able, though I don't speak Bulgarian, I did not speak Bulgarian well, and now I just don't even try. they would understand me if I was having a conversation with someone, if I had something simple to ask them. Well, can you sing that song again, or what does this song mean, or what does this word mean? I can communicate on that level. If it's a high intellectual conversation about the merits and demerits of Dostoevsky, I would not fare well at all.
I'd like to play some of the music that you recorded. You suggested a song that is a cappella sung by Bulgarian women. Tell us about this song before I play it. What is it?
This is a song, The Wind Blows, basically. It's, once again, it's a comment on what's happening out in the village. It doesn't say anything very substantial, per se. And when I recorded this, one of the women had a sore throat. So she only sang one phrase of the music. That's why it's a very short 35 second. But these are two women who came to Sofia from two different villages when they were teenagers in the 1950s. And they, as many village men and women, they joined different ensembles, whether dance or vocal ensembles, because they missed it. They missed what they did in the village, because in the village, you sang all the time. And you had all sorts of celebrations that you always did dancing. It was, there was no TV, and radio came very late to Bulgaria. So it was self-entertainment, just like all other old
times. So there's no judgment about whether it's, quote, good or not, or whether you're good or not. In America, that means commercial.
There are acknowledged people in the village who are the singers. They have reputations, or there's acknowledged dancers. They will lead the lines because they are, they're good at it, and they will bring joy to the everyone on the line if they know what they're doing.
And does everyone get to sing and dance with them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So these two women eventually got together in a choir, and then they became partners for life in terms of singing partners. And they sang in the radio ensemble, and their voices are so seamless. One of their mothers said, I can't tell who's singing what, because their voices blend so well.
So what is the title of this song?
Veterve, the wind blows.
Veterve.
Veterve.
Is right. That goes right to the central
nervous system. Right to the central nervous system. Oh.
We were going for the next one. technology doesn't always work for me.
Yes.
So that was, we're talking with Martin Koenig, who is the author, the researcher, and the public sector folklorist who has created a book called Sound Portraits from Bulgaria, A Journey to a Vanished World. And you covered 1966 to 1979 in this book, Martin. How did you get the Smithsonian to do this, to create this book for you, which is incredibly beautiful?
Well, I didn't get them. They came to me, which was very
even
nice.
Even better.
I was a co-director of my center in New York City from 1968 through 94 before I came to Vashon. By the way, I would like to say, Susan, that this book, I will be giving a presentation at the O Space.
Yes.
On this Sunday, and I will show photographs and I will show some films of dance footage. And I will talk about whatever. They will know more about Bulgaria than anybody ever thought they wanted to know.
there's a lot to know.
And
it's really very beautiful.
And it's a very interesting place. If you go to a map and see where they are, it's not the Baltics, which people always confuse. It's southeastern Europe. It's right next to Turkey. It's north of Greece. It's west of Macedonia and Serbia, and it's south of the Danube and Romania. And it's right on the crossroads that anyone who wanted to conquer Europe from the east, they went right through Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who wanted to conquer, go to the Crusades or conquer folks in the Middle East or the Near East from Europe, they went right through Bulgaria. So Bulgaria has lots of layers from lots of different people coming through there.
I did just a little research, and that civilization has been around since around 4000 BC.
They also feel very proud and say that they are the oldest European nation.
Are they?
Still is in existence. I don't know. they're old. They've been around a long time.
4,000 BC is old. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're still there. So, you know, it is very interesting. Your question, I'm sorry.
Well, my question, when I looked at the photos, the men were dancing. I didn't see a lot of women dancing. Is this something that is a male purview? Apparently the women sing.
Men and women dance, and if you didn't see women on the lines, that's my negligence.
Well, I'm sure I didn't see all the photos in the book.
I think there are some in there with women. Actually, I do know it. There are.
It's great to see men dancing, and I know that for years...
Unconsciously. It's just part of life and part of how you celebrate something, you dance. Very physical, very... I think that was true, though, about all the older societies. I mean, I think this is modern society makes you get more in your brain than in your body.
Creates a lot of self-consciousness.
Yeah, and a lot of self-consciousness, and everybody's doing it. You're not doing it as a performance. You're doing it for your own self-satisfaction. And you get up, and when you feel so moved, you get up and join the dance line. And you're just one more guy.
And it's another way to communicate, to commune, if you will,
totally,
with others. We only have 2 minutes left, but Martin Caney, you were known for years here on the island as the guy who led the folk dances at the Village Green.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to continue doing that?
You know, when I do these projects, it leaves me no room to even think, because it really takes a lot of planning to do it at the Village Green or down at the by the library. Or we used to do it on the shore, down by Doug Dolstadt's tennis court. It just takes, you have to organize it, you have to advertise it. I will be doing at O Space a photography show. And at that photography show, that's now, it's just came down from Bulgaria. I will coordinate some concerts that will go with it. Those concerts will have dance bands.
Oh, yeah.
They will be dancing.
Okay, that's wonderful. 1 minute left, and I have one last question. You mentioned a generational divide among Bulgarian village musicians, wherein the younger men were incorporating contemporary sounds into their renderings of traditional songs, and the older musicians resisted that evolution. Which of these styles are you preserving in your book?
I just felt that those older guys should be acknowledged for what they did. And I found their music, while it may not be as virtuosic as the younger musicians, it was full of soul, full of spirit, a lot of singing with their melodies, they were basically swept aside. And you see that in all the communities. It's not just Bulgaria. That conversation is going all the time between the older and the younger.
That's kind of the story of life.
I think so.
Martin Koenig, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners. This has been Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. And we're here every Tuesday at lunchtime to explore questions large and small. Send your questions to me at realtalk@voiceofvashon.org. No question is too silly. Thanks for listening.